Welcome to The Plants We Eat, an investigation of the history, biology, and culture of the plants that we use for food. I'm Jeff Gilman, director of the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens and plant history buff, because, you know, I am totally buff.
And I'm Cindy Proctor, instructor at Central Piedmont Community College, Charlotte, North Carolina, and your urban garden coach extraordinaire.
And, you know, as I said before, the coach is just, I like the coach. And you're a total cornball, too, which is important because today we are covering corn. Exactly. And, you know, the story of corn is really the story of modern agriculture.
This is going to be your show today with corn.
I'm so excited to talk about corn. And it's not really the corn itself. It's the whole process that we have making corn a really useful crop. You know, making corn dominate our grain market. 95% of the total feed grain that's produced in the United States today is corn. I mean, we produce it for, you know, primarily for feed for cattle, but it's also used for fuel. About 25% of the corn produced in the U.S. now is used for ethanol. 36% is used for corn to feed livestock. About 11% is used for products like high fructose corn syrup. About 10% is used as distiller's grain. If you want to know what distiller's grain is, that's basically alcohol that's made from the leftover material that can be used as a high protein livestock food. About 11% is exported. We use corn for just all kinds of stuff. It's just one of the interesting things to me. So, well, let me start at the beginning. Corn was developed about 7,000 years ago by Native Americans. It was derived from a grain called teosinte by people living in central Mexico. It moved up into what is now the United States. It arrived in Europe with Columbus, and it spread. You know, many of the crops we talk about in this show spread kind of slowly. Corn spread extremely rapidly over in Europe, and it spread rapidly because it thrived and does thrive in many, many climates. Mm-hmm. It's useful for a lot of different things. Corn in the United States, so is grown kind of as typical corn up through the 1800s. But in the later 1800s, something really neat was discovered. Have you heard of inbreeding depression? I'll take that as a yes.
I was like, where are you going with this?
Well,
it's a plant show.
Inbreeding depression, sure, it's sometimes used with people with, you know.
But used a lot with plants.
Used a lot with plants.
Yes, I was teasing.
If plants are bred together, then what we often see is that the plants don't produce as much. So inbreeding depression is, you know, similar plants, if they're bred together, actually tend to produce less yield. Well, there's an opposite of that, and the opposite is hybrid vigor. Hybrid is crossing two genetically different things. We produce these genetically two different things. We often get an offspring that is just quite a bit larger than you would expect based on either parent.
Or performs better.
Right, performs better, grows better. With corn, it actually often manifests as ears, which are just two times as big as the parents it came from. So this is a big deal. And this was really discovered by these two researchers named Scholl and East. And Scholl and East demonstrated this hybrid vigor, also known as heterosis, in the early 1900s. It's increased size, it's increased health. It's just this improvement that we see when two things are bred together. Now, here's the crazy thing, though. You breed two different types of corn together, and this first generation, the seed that we get from breeding these two different things together, this produces something that's bigger. And then you take that seed and you plant it out, no matter what you cross it with, and that is not bigger. See, that's the thing.
It's like a science project gone wrong.
Exactly.
Yes.
You have this first generation that's bigger, and then the seeds from the first generation, no matter what you do, doesn't make something that's larger. So actually, this is a very, very big deal. The next time that you drive by a cornfield, look at the tassels. You see, the top of the corn is the tassels, and that's actually the male flowers of the plant. And then below the tassels, that's where the female flowers are. So what they do in a cornfield frequently, where they're getting seed corn, is they'll cut off the tassels of one variety of corn and leave the tassels of the next. And so what happens is that the pollen of the tassels that are left fertilize or give pollen to the female flowers of the corn that's remained out there that has been detasseled, right? So what happens is that you collect the corn of the detasseled plants and you plant that, and that will exhibit hybrid vigor. So that's how you collect seeds to plant. But that only lasts, that increased size only lasts one generation, and that is the way that corn is produced today. We produce hybrid corn. And again, with the hybrid corn, we're getting these corn stalks, we're getting the seed corn from corn that has been pollinated by other varieties, and this only lasts that one generation. So that's a very big deal.
Sounds difficult based on how we continue those same traits in other plants. I mean, you know, like we take cuttings,
right?
You know, this is a certain way how you plant it and how you care for it and certain steps along its growth to make sure, to ensure you get a big piece of corn.
It is. It's very difficult and labor intensive. Cutting off these tassels at one time used to be done by hand. You'd have people actually going through and cutting off the tassels of all of this one variety of corn so that it couldn't pollinate itself and produce these smaller ears. Of course, now we can do it using a machine where you'll actually go in with, actually, if you notice, sickle bar mower is just a bar that'll cut all the tassels off of this, you know, one row of corn or multiple rows of corn so that we don't have those tassels. So when you pass cornfields now, look for rows of corn that have been detasseled with the male flowers removed. So the thing about it is that we learned this, again, late 1800s, early 1900s, that we could develop this corn seed that would produce these crops with this hybrid vigor. But then something else happened which let us produce even more corn. You see, this corn with the hybrid vigor, they needed to feed off of nitrogen, right? They needed to get nutrients same as any other crop. And until the early 1900s, we could barely deliver the nitrogen that these crops demanded. Nitrogen is the nutrient that these crops most need in order to grow. They've got to have this tremendous amount of nitrogen, about 100 to 200 pounds per acre. And interestingly enough, just as a side note, if you apply 100 pounds of nitrogen per acre as a fertilizer, how much of that nitrogen actually gets to the corn? And by the way, corn is considered pretty darn efficient. A lot of other crops aren't able to use this amount. Well, do you have a guess? If you apply 100 pounds of nitrogen, how much of that nitrogen actually gets to the corn?
Well, I'd have to read.
Yeah.
But I would say a lot. I mean,
you'd guess a lot. I think a lot of people would.
Well, because we, in agriculture, we tend to overshoot in hopes that the plant will take it up, because other things like water movement and temperature play a big part in all that.
Absolutely. So it's NUE, we call it, nutrient use efficiency. Mm-hmm. Corn is near the top of the list, and we would think a lot. And it is a lot, relatively speaking, about 40 pounds. 40% efficient.
I haven't read that. It's impressive.
Is actually considered quite efficient. So the other 60 pounds either go through the soil profile or are washed off. I mean, it's amazing.
That doesn't make me happy either, but it's still, that's a great efficiency rate.
It is a great efficiency rate. And I'm sure we all wish it was higher, but this is just the efficiency rate that plants have. So anyway, we want to get more nitrogen in the corn in the early 1900s, late 1800s. And where does this nitrogen come from? Well, this nitrogen comes from something called the Haber-Bosch reaction. And this is a really famous reaction. This is tremendously important. In fact, it's estimated that two-fifths of the people that currently live on the planet Earth would not live here if not for this reaction, because this is where all our fertilizer comes from for growing all of our crops. For all the people who are really into organics talk about being able to feed the world on organics, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. We need to use this synthetic nitrogen in order to maintain the number of people that we currently have on this planet. So what is the Haber-Bosch reaction? Well, the Haber-Bosch reaction originally was invented by Haber and Bosch around World War I, and it was developed certainly for fertilizer to some extent, but more so for gunpowder. I mean, this was before World War I. We knew World War I was coming. Those of you who've watched Downton Abbey will know that they knew World War I was coming before World War I came. And knowing that it was coming, the Germans knew that they would not be able to get to the big source of nitrogen in the world, which was actually Peru. They knew they wouldn't be able to get to Peru to get this nitrogen that they needed for explosives. So they wanted another way to get nitrogen. They went to the place where there's the most nitrogen in the whole world, and that is the air. The problem is the nitrogen in the air is present in a state which is not easily convertible to gunpowder. So Haber and Bosch figured out a way to take this nitrogen from the air and to make it into ammonia. And ammonia actually is easily convertible into explosives and also into fertilizers. What they did was they took high temperature and high pressure, and under this high temperature and high pressure, and in the presence of a catalyst also, they needed a catalyst, was actually a type of iron. And in the presence of this catalyst, the nitrogen in the air would actually break into ammonia. They also had to add hydrogen. The hydrogen could come from water or from natural gas. So once they had this synthetic form of nitrogen, they could then apply it to fields. And once they applied it to fields, they could get corn to grow. So modern corn production is dependent upon producing this hybrid seed, and it's dependent on being able to artificially put 1 to 200 pounds per acre of nitrogen on fields. And if we weren't able to do that, we could not produce corn in the way we do today. Of course, some people would say that's good, because corn has a lot of problems. We've become dependent on it because corn grows in so many climatic situations. But the truth is, corn has some serious problems in terms of health. Corn is low in a lot of proteins. It's low in a lot of vitamins. Sure, it produces a lot of carbohydrates, but it's not really the healthiest plant out there. And if your diet considers solely on corn, shoot, you're going to have niacin deficiencies. It's just not particularly healthy. And then there's ethanol. We're using so much of our corn for ethanol. Well, here's the thing, and there are different papers that debate this, but the fact that this is debatable is a big deal. It actually takes, arguably, as much energy to produce this ethanol as the ethanol provides. This is different from sugarcane. You know, if you've read if you've listened to our previous episode on sugarcane, you know that sugarcane just produces energy. Corn is not nearly as efficient at producing energy. It's arguable that it takes more energy to produce corn than the corn produces for us, especially in terms of ethanol. So corn, just an interesting crop it's fascinating how over the years we've developed these different ways to grow it and doesn't even produce that much value or that much clear value. And of course, today, nowadays, to make corn production even more interesting, most of our corn is genetically modified. And those genetic modifications are usually one of two things. The first is genetic modification of the corn so that it's resistant to various caterpillar pests, mm-hmm. or so that it's resistant to Roundup, mm-hmm. which is
a weed
herbicide.
Killer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, we could argue about whether these genetic modifications, these artificial genetic modifications, are good or bad, but the fact is, to take the bad side, especially with the herbicide, there are a number of weeds that are becoming resistant to Roundup because we're using it so frequently to the corn. And additionally, a number of insect pests that were once resistant to the BT that the corn now produces to repel or to stop the pests. A lot of these insect pests have now become resistant to the BT that we put into the corn as well. So resistance issues are becoming an issue with these genetic modifications that we're doing.
That's what concerns me the most about genetically modified foods is the resistance.
The health issues, honestly,
I'm not going to discount them, but I'm not going to put a lot of weight into them.
Exactly. The studies that have shown any issues at all are, honestly, and I've reviewed these papers, they're very questionable papers. So I really do not believe that genetic modification has anything to do with our health or can harm our health in any significant way. I am concerned about the resistance to herbicides that weeds are undergoing, and I am concerned about the resistance to certain insecticides that the corn is breeding because every kernel now has this pesticide in it to hurt the pests.
Well, so would you grow corn in your backyard?
Sweet corn, would I grow it? I would grow a stalk or two of sweet corn, I guess.
Well, you need a few. You need a few to get a couple ears, you know, for that season. But it's not something I would really grow.
Well, you know, there's a couple of different types of corn. And we probably should have started by talking about the types of corn.
There's different ones grown for popcorn.
Right. We've got
feed and food. Sorry, go ahead.
There's dent corn, flint corn, mm-hmm. pod corn, popcorn, flower corn, and sweet corn. And of those, for the homeowner, I think only two make any sense at all, and that's popcorn and sweet corn.
Right. And because you still could, I guess you could still get a few popcorns from your ear of corn. But, you know, it's kind of like sugar cane. It reminded me a lot of sugar cane, growing it in your backyard. Sugar cane, I would rather grow than corn.
You'd rather go sugar cane than corn?
Yes.
Really? Why?
Well, because I have a whole cane to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Sugar corn, I may get an ear and I may not, you know, from my efforts and for the space that it needs.
You know, for thinking about this, did you find yourself as you looked through corn, did you find yourself saying, why are we so dependent on this crop? It's
yes.
really not an efficient crop.
Yes, I did, because especially in the South, you'll see fields and acres right. devoted to growing corn. And I know it's feed corn, but you know what? I look at it from a horticulture standpoint. You're mm-hmm. going to laugh at this.
Go ahead.
We all get busy and we all talk about, gee, is it been drier than usual? Has mm-hmm. it been hotter than usual this summer? I look at the growth of corn mm-hmm. to tell me
yes.
whether or not that my thought process is correct on how the weather is doing, because it's very revealing. It does not like dry at all. That is a hard part about growing corn.
No, it'll take wet more than it'll take dry.
It will, and it needs about an inch a week, which
yes.
is difficult, and farms aren't usually irrigated on a mass mm-hmm. basis. So if I see in July that the corn harvest is bad, mm-hmm. then I know we are experiencing a drought. So that's really, as a horticulture standpoint, I rely on corn. But yes, I agree. We do put a lot of input with not good output from corn. So I'm not going to recommend
it. We've become over the years more and more efficient to that, again, with that 40% nutrient use efficiency. That's great. So we have made corn more and more efficient. And yet, even with making the corn more and more efficient, it's kind of borderline. Of course, then, you know, we're talking about using it for feed corn. Let's face it, the meat industry is not an efficient way to use our crops. And I'm certainly no vegetarian. I'm not going to claim that I am. But when we start feeding this food to animals, we just lose a whole nother level of efficiency, because the animal isn't going to be perfectly efficient with converting that vegetable matter into meat. Mm-hmm. It can't be 100% efficient. So we lose all these levels of efficiency as it goes down the line.
Now, do you love sweet corn?
I don't love sweet corn, but I certainly like it.
Okay. So if I'm going to eat corn on the cob, which, hey, that's the best way to eat it.
Yes, it is.
Sweet corn by far is really good, but you buy it local. Make sure mm-hmm. you buy it local, because yeah. it will turn into starch soon after harvest.
Yes.
And I've tasted that before. It's okay.
I actually used to eat just field corn. I can't tell you exactly which type it was from the field next door when mm-hmm. I was growing up. And it really, you could eat it, but it wasn't very good. And after we did that a few times, we pretty much, you know, grew our own sweet corn or bought local sweet corn, or we didn't bother buying it.
Well, that's not many people borrow corn from fields because it's field corn.
You do it two or three times, maybe not the first time. The first time you kind of think that you made a little bit of a mistake, and then you realize it's just not very good. And it's actually not awful, but it's nothing that you want
to. And shucking corn, every child should learn how to do. So buy it with the shucks on.
For your kids to shuck.
Yes, that's their job at mealtime.
I agree completely.
Okay, you know, so I'm not going to recommend trying to grow in an urban setting.
I am not going to recommend trying to grow it either. I've grown up and been around corn my entire life in one way or another. You know, talking about corn being grown in the South. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, I lived in Minnesota for 15 years, and I'd go through Iowa and let me tell you.
Oh,
Iowa,
yeah, just Midwest for sure. Yeah,
I personally think that as a U.S. agriculture, we should attempt to move away from corn, just generally speaking. And, you know, we use it mostly, again, as feedstock. I also think that we should try and move away from using meat quite as much as we do for health reasons, as much as for anything else. I don't think we need protein in three of our three meals a day. I think we could. And by protein, I mean meat protein.
Okay.
I don't think we need meat protein in three of our three meals a day. I think we could probably have it in, one a day and be just fine. In fact, all the evidence is that would be much healthier for us.
Well, that means that we can grow more things in the garden.
Exactly.
Talk about more awesome things.
Exactly. This has been The Plants We Eat, produced by the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens with the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Thank you to Alex Prezel with the UNC Charlotte Isle Group and Alex Chapin with College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And we look forward to talking to you soon about another super cool plant that we eat.